This is the fourth part of exploration of thoughts on the topic of sex. And basically we get now to the essence of sex. Because the fourth part is, let's say, the magic of sex. And of course we have to be very careful with the use of those words. Magic comes from the Sanskrit word of magd, which is power. Which is essentially that you can choose how you want to live and that you are able to put it in action. Of course, that also means that you must be responsible for the sequence of consequences of what you want to put into action. So there is a lot of bad press around the topic of magic, because if you decide that you want to live your life, you need to also learn how to respect the life of others. And that means that you must be able to understand yourself and interact with others in such a way that they know that they are understood, that they can be as they choose to be. So this is the spiritual level of being. And interestingly enough, that kind of relationship between being able to be yourself and allowing others to be themselves too is what we would normally naturally learn in sex. At the level of development, from the transition from baby to child to adolescent to adult, in adolescence we would normally, in learning how to live our own soul, also learn to respect the souls and capacity limitations of others, in learning how to be ourselves while they too can be themselves. And sex is the best place to experience that. This is the fourth part of a series of explorations on sex, and I realized that I needed to do that because what I learned at home or in school or in medical school just didn't seem to match what I experienced within my body and within my psyche. And as I described, I explored four parts of that story. First, I looked into why does sex have such a bad press, and I discovered that most of it was because some people try to manipulate other people. For one, because if you go into a full sexual experience, you do get to know yourself, you do get to transcend your own limitations, you get into what in India would be called God awareness, and as a result you're no longer an agile slave, you're no longer a dependable servant, because you realize that you are master of yourself and nobody can actually tell you what to do, because otherwise how can you learn to be a creator in creation if not you are the creator of your own learning and your own mistakes, and if not only you is responsible for the errors that you make and how you can learn from them. So to be a creator in creation, you need to be able to have self-mastery, which is about self-respect, and the only way to have self-respect is to do that with others. So the church system had a different view on that, because they extended the Roman slave state ideal. So that was the first part of the story. The second part of the story was that in biology we can see the wide variety of sexuality and the forms of sexuality, and actually the forms in which sexuality is shown and takes place, and that it is much more than what we experience in our body. So it's really worthwhile to look into nature, into the biology and all those aspects of sexuality to get a much broader understanding, which shows that sexuality is a means by which life on earth learns and can share that learning and can be more precise and more specific in that learning. And part of that is that they learn to be the biology learn to be more precise and more specific in sexuality, and because through sexuality you can build up on the DNA that you have, which will build a body, which will determine a kind of interaction, which will determine a kind of experience of life on Earth. All of the forms of life on Earth are interconnected by the food chain, so we all learn with and from each other. The third part of the story was about how we do that with each other as male and female, as boy and girl, man and woman. And the third part was specifically about how the male and the female complement each other. And actually that whole interplay between information and matter matters very much when you use freedom of choice in your body. So the freedom of choice is actually something that we learn to define and also limit in puberty. We learn that we have limits. It's a bit like in science. You would say that the baby phase was classical science. The childhood phase was theory of relativity, which is confined by an event horizon, which is the speed of life. There's a sort of hoop around it in which it is valid. Outside, you can't say much. And puberty is like quantum theory, which is characterized by the quantum leap. That it is really important how you connect the one side and the other, and sexuality is a very precise expression of that. And field theory is like adulthood, is where you see how it matters how you tune and how you connect it all. So the third part of the story was about how in puberty we can see in the body how sexuality developed and how sexuality works and how we can work with sexuality, but also how that leads to a build-up from, say, physical to chemical to electromagnetic to pure consciousness. And that's where the fourth part of the story then can come into play. So this then is the fourth part of that story, and it is about that very precise aspect of sex which people call orgasm, which is basically a flooding of an electromagnetic field. It's like a charge discharge in the body, and as such it has relationships to the physio-kundalini syndrome as described by Itzhak Bentov, which is the core chapter in the book Stalking the Wild Pendulum, which is all about the oscillations in our body, not physiological but electrophysiological. And that all has to do with this wide research, which medical doctors often ignore and other people know too little of, which is the electro information circulation in our body. Robert Becker did expansive work on that. Cyril Smith showed details of how the acupuncture and meridian and homeopathy system are all interconnected. You see, I'm sort of trying to find my words because these systems are actually so interrelated and interconnected. And in our body we find that as the electrical signals in the neurons versus the electrical pulses conveyed by the hormones. So there is this whole level of the body where we no longer can regard our body as physical, but we need to understand our body as physiological, specifically electrophysiological. This is where I'd like to start by recapitulating the work of Bert Verveen, a physiologist who realized that it is possible to explicitly define health in our body. Once you understand that our body is created by the first cell of the body, which divides and divides and divides again, and in dividing multiplies, then you can also understand that that process of cell division, which in our body forms a fractal, which Susi Froebel calls a time fractal, that that fractal of unfolding the body is actually the counterpart of the sexual fusion of all of your ancestors. So your first cell was formed out of the sexual fusion of your father and your mother. they had a body which was started out of the first cell, which was originated out of the cell fusion of their father and their mother, and so on. So our body starts from one cell, which is the end point of a fractal of cell fusions, sexual cell fusions, which is also a whole cascade of filtering of partner selection. So out of the billions or millions of thousands of hundreds of people available in that area at that time, your ancestor selected one specific other sexual partner and as a result fused the DNA in that parent's body with the DNA of that partner's body. So if it was a male, it would be complemented with the DNA of the female plus the circular DNA of that female, and if it was a female, she would have an extra strand of linear DNA to come in into that story, and all of those DNA stories came together forming your specific first cell and thus forming your body. So sexuality is a filtering technique by which in humanity, in society, people decide with whom they will have a sexual interaction and have a sexual outcome, a product, a result, which is in your case you. So it is not just your body that comes out of the sexual interactions, it's also like horse trainers, dog trainers, flower growers know, characteristics of all of those ancestors come together. So it is not just a sexual interaction that you have when you have sex, do sex, or whatever you want to call it, but it is also a meeting of minds, it's also a meeting or merging or alignment of souls, and it is also a confusion or infusion of spirit. Because all of these ancestors selected whom they wanted to have sex with for whichever reason. Sometimes it is no more than an itch and an urge for a sexual scratch and a birthing coming out of it. Sometimes it's out of people doing things together, a merging of minds, infusing each other with ideas, and out of that comes an enthusiasm and a moment of transcendental realization, which is celebrated in a sexual interaction, and out of that comes an offspring. Or it is people who have crafted their own destiny and who have sculpted their own soul and who become very critical and selective on who they interact with and how they interact with others, and who have realized that they found somebody else who is operating in their soul lineage and on their soul destiny, and out of that decided that they would merge that soul destiny in the consciously and actively giving birth to a new being out of that soul alignment. Or it could be that's out of people infused in spirit, realizing that they are operating in divinity, and that from divinity that there is a moment, yes or no, to produce offspring, because for the universe as a whole that is the logical next step. So it depends very much on the internal development of an individual to know at which level they function in themselves, in their own body, mind, soul and spirit. But of course that also correlates with how they developed in society as an individual, having relationships in groups in humanity. And as you can see from a lot of the social regulations, that very often sex is used as a means to procreate a specific group, which very often is a financial interest or an interest in cultivating a belief, or it could be a pure economical interest of a domination of a land. And then sometimes it is not a group like a clan, but it's just a family who's trying to get those kind of interests perpetuated, and often that can be at the exclusion of everybody else, as some tribes say that they are the chosen people, that they are the people. Like many of the names of different tribes means the people, and in a way that means that other people are not the people, so that there is a discrimination, apartheid policy at the basis of all of that. So that happens in tribes, that happens in families, it happens in individuals. The narcissist always believes that it's all about them and they're the only ones who are interesting, and the rest of the people just don't matter very much. But those are all patterns of development, and there is a lot unresolved in our present time, in our cultures, at the level of individual development from body, mind, soul and spirit, or a development from individual to relationship to group to humanity, and there's also the development from dependent to self-standing to autonomous to sovereign. And all of those approaches of development in body, mind, soul and spirit are available within humanity. And in sexuality, of course, you can have any human being in one state of development connecting up with somebody in another state of development, and sex doesn't much care about the body, mind, soul of spirit of things. As Dawkins said, it's basically just the gene wanting to continue to live and creating its body in order to do so. Lynn Margulis says it's probably rather the other way around, that there is a kind of information exchange with the environment which was created as the lightning formed the amino acid in the primordial gases on Earth, and then that interaction continues. In both cases you'll end up with the realization that you have a DNA in a body and that sex is the means to propagate that. The focus in society is very often on the physical side of that, also connected to the Roman rules and regulations on ownership and monopoly, but there's also the other side of that, which has to do with the development of spirit and the capacity to function as a creator in creation. And that depends on development of the understanding of freedom of choice. And there you can see that there is a staging as well, which goes from freedom of choice to taking a decision, to having a conviction, to acting on that, most often by reflex. Which you can also say in a different way, that it is by your freedom of choice that you have free will, that you can have free expression, and that you can have free association. So once you start to understand that it is not just our bodies that live, but it's also our consciousness that develops, then sexuality suddenly is no longer a pure physical affair of having affairs and having offspring, yes or no. But it's also, and even more so, about what kind of consciousness can you fertilize, and what kind of consciousness can you incarnate. That part is often left out of the story, and that has a lot to do with the denial of magic. Just think back, in part one I mentioned that the Roman Church has to a large part tried to dominate the course of society. I assume that they meant well. The result is that people are at the moment ignorant about many things, including sex, and that didn't really help. So what we then saw is that the church, after denying sexuality or trying to regulate it or trying to banish it in specific ways, tried the witch hunt to get rid of all the people who advocated freedom of sex, the wise women, who were also the women who helped as midwives with the birth process, but they also were able to help with the sterilization or anti-conception drugs, herbs, evidently, to help society, balance society, and also in that way help women not to have offspring of men who were abusive towards them, so that the women could actually determine what happened, and the witch hunt was in a way an approach to get rid of that. So we can see that there was a lot of repression of, say, the self-regulation, self-control of sexuality, and also the self-control and self-regulation on the consequence of sex in birth and offspring. But of course you then get the understanding that if the wise women, the midwives, the women who had herbal knowledge and who had the social knowledge were eradicated, which left a huge trauma in the psyche of the European culture, then it is also evident that the aspect of sex which has to do with consciousness was as a result also repressed and to a large extent lost. It is no coincidence that the wise women were called witches, because witches of course is connected to witchcraft, which is magic, and magic in its original meaning is the power of turning your thoughts into results. If you look in the body, it's very easy to see how we do that, because around the pineal gland we work with experiences of the outer world, which for us is a surface sensory sensation, and we compare them to the inner world, which in us is the experience of what happens in the body core. So the pineal gland is able to operate in the light field, where we operate with ideas and ideals. We can compare situations of the present with those of the past. We can compare situation of the environment that we are in to another environment. We can even compare between different seasons. So in our mind we can extend our understanding of the immediacy of the situation that we are in and compare it to other situations, see that there might be other ways to deal with the situation than the one that we seem to be facing at the moment. So the more you are able to connect the dots between where you are now and where else you could have been, or the time that you are now with the other season that you could have been, or had the energy level, the food level, nutrition level that you have now compared to what otherwise it could have been, then suddenly you can have other solutions. And freedom of will is our prime tool to be able to transcend the situation that we are in and connect it to other situations. What happens in the pineal gland is connected to what happens with the hypophysis, the pituitary gland, and that is essentially where the neuronal and the hormonal switches of the body then determine how we will adapt the environment or how we will need to adapt ourselves, say the animal or the vegetative response. So by that we take a decision, we in a way define our relationship to the environment, and as a result open up to the environment and go for a different setting, or close off to the environment and need to digest the situation within us. From there, that then goes to the organ glands, so the next level of response, where we started in the light field and then go to the electromagnetic field. The third level is the chemical field of the organ glands, where we actually tune and set the organs to digest our experience. Internally we call it a belief. So we are then dealing with how we're going to go about this. And it could be that we need to be more extrovert, or we need to be more introvert, we need to be more active, more passive, more rigid, or more flexible. There are eight directions, internal and external, by which we can then define how we relate to the environment by the convictions, by the beliefs that we have. In a way, we create an internal reality that we can then act on. And we have the freedom to make an internal reality, an internal belief, an internal conviction, which is different from the situation that we are in. Evidently, because we are, if we are in a situation that doesn't work, we need to have a conviction of something that for us would work, as a result of which we can act differently and get out of the situation which doesn't work. And that happens at the fourth level of consciousness in our body, when the belief is acted upon by the body cells, and they, by orchestrated motion, help us get out of the situation where we are in, or change us, or change the situation, and so on, so that we can optimize whatever we experience. That principle of having the pineal gland, the pituitary gland, the organ glands, and the body cells connect up is the foundation of the principle of magic, because that is how you can have an idea, turn it into a decision, operate it as a conviction, and then act on it, so that you will have a different result. So for me, that is still a very concise formulation of the principle of magic, by which you can have a thought become real. So in that sense, there is nothing magical about magic, but it is a process that we live in our body, and in doing so we combine the information in our body with the physical activity and the functioning of our body. And so that is the link between information and matter, which is also so central in this whole understanding of sex. So there are many descriptions about sexual magic and sexual ritual magic, and a lot of it is maybe an attempt to help people to realize that there is more to sex than a missionary position, and that sex is more than just producing offspring to be registered in a church, but that instead there is also a capacity in sex to actually get to know yourself and your partner, or principally your partner and yourself, and that it is also possible through sex to get to know yourself at a level of sensing and experiencing which otherwise you would not have access to. And that's specifically because in sexuality there is this transition, which was described in part 3 of this story, where the physical contact goes into a physiological, say a chemical change in the body, which then can result into an electromagnetic, neuronal and hormonal shift in the body, which can then change into a totally different level of awareness. And as I mentioned at a moment, it is comparable to having a car with a stick shift and 4 gears. So that the first gear is where you sort of are deciding on moving or standing still. Are you making contact with the other, yes or no? The second gear is that you decide that yes, there is contact, and you speak this language of the hands and the feet and the body, and as a result the body starts to respond by the internal feeling and the sensing of the body, as a result of which the physiology starts to tune in with the physiology of the other, so you feel into the other, empathy comes in. At the third level you can then feel that it is not just the feeling sensations which seem to attune and synchronize, but there are also thoughts and maybe even pictures that start to become shared between the partners, which of course you can only find out when you talk, while you have sex, and the prose and the poetry all is allowed. So it is only by sharing your sensation that you can see that you're actually experiencing the same things at the same time. And ultimately you would step into a, let's call it a joint reality, where you are both living the same vision, feeling, soundscape, experiential scape, like a virtual reality which is more real than virtual, which is not related to the reality that you're in, but which very much transcends the reality that you're in, so that you opened up to a different level of awareness. And so in the third part of the story, I describe that sex and orgasm actually is a way to go beyond the sensory awareness that you would normally operate into a level of consciousness which is way beyond what you would normally perceive. And that is where we can connect the transition of sex, the orgasm from physical to chemical to electromagnetic to visionary, to what at that time, at the third episode I described, can be compared with chewing the food. That's the physical level, the digesting of the food in the stomach chemical, then the digesting of the food in duodenum electromagnetic with the enzymes, and then the taking in of the food, yes or no, as the consciousness level in the gut. But now we can also compare these shifts of awareness in the build-up towards orgasm with the sleep cycle. In the sleep cycle, we make the transition from looking at the outer world, what's called the beta brainwaves, of the sensory perception of what is happening around us. Then the next level, when you close your eyes, you go into the alpha brainwaves of feeling what's happening in your body. At the third level, theta brainwaves, is where you are actually getting into the organ level and how they process information and undigested experiences and so on. And the fourth level is where you get to the delta level of cell consciousness, which is also called portal of life and death, the visionary level of seeing beyond the realities that we are in. So once you see that there is this direct parallel between the sleep cycle and the stages of orgasm, then you can also compute that when you first make contact, the physical interaction is comparable to that level where you are in your wake state, connected to the world around you. But now it's from the perspective of the body. So you're very much aware of what's happening at the body level and the body touching of the environment in interaction with the sexual partner. Then when the physiology goes, it turns on, you can start to feel much more in the body. But it also means that you have shifted from the beta, say, consciousness level to the alpha subconscious level. So you're much more into a dream state. And your awareness is correspondingly subtler, much more connected, also perhaps less specific, less precise, much more fluid. And so from there you can then go to the third level of consciousness development, which is the unconscious, which in our body would be that level of the organs processing the information. In antiquity it would be called the gods of the Olympus doing their things, because there is the direct relationship between the meridians, the gods of the Olympus, the organs, and are connecting to the environment, how we change our relationship in our environment. So that's at that third level, which is the unconscious level. You can only be immersed in it, and it's like you're in the engine of the car seeing what's happening, and at that time you're not looking at the car much, and you're certainly not involved with the road much. You're at the level of the internal mechanic. You can go one level deeper. The level is the cell consciousness, which for most people is out of consciousness. It's comatose. It's no longer at the level of consciousness that we are in. Many of the mystical schools have meditation techniques which are all based on following that pattern of the sleep cycle, in going from the outer world, overloading the sense of what happens around you, to closing your eyes. What do you feel in your body? Alpha level. To going deeper, what is it that you feel as changing within your body? Which part of the body are actually doing something or not doing something? The organ level of the body. And then beyond that, what is actually going on everywhere at say a yes no level, a life dead level, are you there, are you not there level of the cellular delta, brainwave frequency consciousness. Once you understand that, you can also see that you can connect that to what happens in the transition of sex. So at the first level you have the external awareness, the second level you have the body awareness, the third level you have the organ awareness, fourth level you have the cell awareness. First level you're conscious, second unconscious, third level first level you're conscious, second you're subconscious, third you're unconscious, fourth you're out of conscious. But that means that by having this sexual experience, the more you do it, the longer you do it, the more you're attuned into each other, and the more you pay attention to the other rather than yourself, you discover that there is something else that comes in, because you're responding to the other, but at the same time the other is responding to you. So you're not acting, the other is not acting, but you're interacting. You're even not reacting anymore, because you react to what the other does, but at the same time the other reacts to what you're doing. So a reaction upon a reaction is no longer a reaction, it is an interaction. So suddenly your consciousness is no longer identified with you, and the consciousness is no longer identified with the other. For the other it's the other way around, but suddenly the consciousness is identified with what happens between you, and then you get to the level that you actually get into the awareness that that consciousness that operates between you also operates you within you and also operates within the other. It's just that you weren't aware of it before, that you focused on your experience of consciousness and awareness and the reality around you, and the other focused on the other's consciousness of the environment and the reality that we seem to be in. But when you go to that third level, suddenly in system engineering is called the critical level or the transition level, suddenly it's you're on the boundary of the one and the other, and you discover that the one and the other are just complementary parts of the same story. So that you are you and the other is the other, but at the same time you are the same, while you're at the same time different. So you start to process in a different manner, and as a result you can get out of your own limited awareness and add to it the awareness of the other. That's where I before described it as suddenly you go from mono sound to stereo sound. And in the Nordic tradition, this is what was called the transition from seeing with two eyes to seeing with one eye. It is depicted as Odin, who's wearing an eye patch, and a lot of people think that that's the pirate thing to do, but in fact it reflects to the understanding that Odin wanted to see what is really happening, and so he was told that he needed to drink from Mimis Brunnar, which is the source of knowledge. And in effect it meant that he needed to close his eyes, to stop looking at the world as around, and to start looking at the world within. And in a very practical sense you can say that the third eye is the pineal gland. It is functionally, operationally quite similar to an eye with say the retina on both sides of it, and it can look into the light field in our brain. So that light field is then the source, the fount of wisdom that Odin then learned to look into. But in the transition from the physical contact in sex to the physiological contact in sex, to the neurocrine contact in sex, to the consciousness level of sexuality, it is that same kind of transition that we shift from the perception of the outer world to our relationship to it, to our interaction to it, to our being it. So in sex and in the transition of orgasm, we can actually go into those deeper levels of consciousness, but as mentioned, you can only do that if you follow the rhythm and you follow the sequence. And that is also where you need to realize that for the men and the women, the physical world is comparable. But in the women, the next level of processing is physiological, where in the men it would be more neurological. At the third level, for the women it would be neurological, while for the men it would most be physiological, hormonal. And at the fourth level, again, it's all the same, all of it is consciousness. But when you follow the sequence, in the female you can see that it's from physical to chemical to neurological to consciousness, while in the man the transition in the sexual staging is from physical to neuronal to hormonal to consciousness. And that's where the man needs to follow the rhythm of the female, because in the other way around there is a switch in the middle and you end up at the wrong side of the boundary, so to say. So all of this is quite well known in schools of mystery, mystical training, sexual training, and so there's many descriptions of this in the trainings of Tantra and the trainings of Tao. In the trainings of Tantra there's often a reference to the deities of India, and that doesn't make much sense until you realize that the deities of India are actually the organic functions, the functions of the organs as they operate within our body. And it is necessary to understand that the organs of the body, or the deities of India, are the same as the gods of the zodiac, or the gods of the Olympus, which are the gods of the zodiac. And in the zodiac you can see in which order they form their cycle. And then you can also see how the deities of India together form that cycle. In fact, the organ cycle in our body is not a loop, but it is a double loop, it's a Möbius loop. The internal cycle is always connected up to the external cycle. The external food chain feeds into the internal food chain between our organs, which are united in our bloodstream. So once you understand that, then you can understand that when in tantric sex they talk about the deities, these are actually the organs, and each of the organs is a filter in the relation between the inside and the outside of the body. But they correspond to, let's say, the seasons of the year. So some organs are very much to do with the survival in winter, and kidneys are connected to that. Some of them are connected to spring and the bringing out of growth and energy. Liver is connected to that. Some are connected to the summer. Heart, singing, is connected to that. And some of them are connected to autumn and letting go. And the large intestine is connected to that. And so all of them are integrated around the body being in balance with itself within its environment, which is the identity, which is, say, represented with our stomach and our pancreas. So once you see how these organs are related to these principles of connecting in the environment, then you can also see how these principles of connecting in the environment play a role in the relationships. And then evidently the relationship that you have with yourself, the relationship that you have with your environment, the relationship that you have with your partner, and the other way around, then all come into play in that process of connecting up in the sexual interaction, where you actually are starting to relate to the principle of creation of the universe as a whole, because it's at that level that sexuality and orgasm operate. But then you can also understand that sexuality is just the score of the music for the dance of the creator in creation, but it is the dancer who had the consciousness and how you connect yourself to the environment, in this case with a partner, which is the core of the sexual interaction. That's where orgasm is so important, because that brings you from the physical to the physiological, to the neurocrine, at the electrical level of the body, into the level of consciousness, pure information. So you, as the alchemists say, you need to increase your frequency, so you need to step up your rhythm so that you operate at the level of pure consciousness. And in the transition of orgasm, that is what you can then experience. Again, I want to connect that to what Bert Verveen said. He said that the physiology of our body is based on the feed-forward and the feedback loop between the cells. And the sexual interaction is based on a feed-forward and a feedback loop between you and a partner. In the body, we can see that the feed-forward and the feedback loop is not just our physiology, but it's also our psychology. Because this exchange between the cells is also the foundation of everything that we think and can think. In the same way as the physiology is the psychology within our body, the physiology is also the sociology outside of our body. Because the feed-forward and the feedback between individuals follows that same pattern as that of the feed-forward and feedback between the cells. But likewise, it is also the ecology. It's not just how we relate from human to human, but it's also how we relate from human to earth, the ecology. So that model of Bert Verveen, of the feed-forward and the feedback loops together creating the health of our being, then applies to our physiology, our psychology, our sociology, and our ecology. And that is too what we then experience in that relationship between the levels of orgasm, at the physical, the chemical, the electromagnetic, and the pure consciousness level. And as mentioned before, those are the levels that we also operate in freedom of choice, from the pineal gland, pituitary gland, the organ glands, to the body cells, from the light field to the electromagnetic field to the chemical field to the physical field. So that's where we can then see that sex and magic are directly related, but it also means that in learning to operate sex and orgasm, we also learn to operate magic. That becomes very explicit, because in the shift from, say, the physical to the physiological to the neurological to the psychological, the pure consciousness level of orgasm, you speed up, you make use of the processes that operate at all of these levels, at each of these levels. But it also means that when you shift gear from one process level to the other, that you will also operate the problems which exist at that process level. So if you have unresolved problems in the body, then you need to first deal with them. If you have physical stresses in the body, then you need to do the massage, and you need to do the stretching, you need to do the yoga to unclutter the body from the stresses that are holding it in a fixation grip. Your body first needs to become flexible again, and all the blockages in it need to be resolved. And there are many forms of therapy which can be used for that. Postural integration is named after that principle. So it is very good to resolve the bodily conflicts by getting the charge discharged out of the body level. At the next level, you then have the physiological processes, which in our being, in our body, is also the psychological level. It's the chemistry, which is also the currents of electricity in our body. And if there are undigested experiences or undigested food anywhere in the system, you will first need to resolve that. Undigested food will become quite clear quite easily, and people are most often aware of that. But undigested experiences, people are often less aware of. They notice it in the way that they interact to each other, that suddenly they say something and there is an opposite response to what they meant, then you know that something was stuck in the psyche of the other, in the mind level of the, say, the information physiology of the other, that it sort of bounced backwards and backfired and turned into an opposite meaning. Then there are techniques like applied kinesiology, neurolinguistic programming, hypnosis, and mutual hypnosis, by which you can address these undissolved and unresolved psychological traumata, so that you can unblock them and get rid of them. And as some people might know, this is what is described by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross as the undigested experiences in the core text of the Tibetan Book of the Dead. It was also known as the unreleased attachments. So basically that's where you have an idée fixe still hovering in your belief systems, which is actually blocking your full processing at that level. At the third level, when you move into the electromagnetic level, where the neurons and the hormones need to be able to work together, where you're able to digest your experiences for your life as a whole, that's actually where you then enter into the level of the soul. And the soul is the alignment of all the choices that you've made in your life and how they connect up. But sometimes in your life there are shocks as a result of which that what you intended to do is not possible. And if you have expectations, then a fragment of your expectations get disheveled, get parked somewhere, and it forms a block on the alignment of what you could do or would like to do in your life at the soul level, what you wish to live for. It is like you lost part of your reality or lost contact to your reality. And at that third level, you then discover that there are fundamental beliefs, rather decisions about beliefs, which you took, which are not correct, and you need to remedy them. And in the interaction with the partner, you would experience them as belief conflicts, as no, it's not so, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. But when you look at the level of the soul, you will always be able to see that if somebody says no and the other says yes, then it probably means that you're standing back to back, that what you see the other does not see, and what the other sees you do not see. But once you realize that, you together, you then realize that you have a 360 degree vision, which is much more than you would have alone. So once you see that the opposition between you and the other is actually the complementarity of viewpoints, then you immediately can reconnect to the soul level and see, well, we are actually looking at the same, but from opposite perspective. In fact, we complement and complete each other. For many people, this is contrary to what they are told. There are many religions who say that there are oppositions and those are crucial, and many Hollywood movies are about good and bad fighting with each other. And rarely do good and bad realize that they're actually trying to achieve the same outcome, but just from a different perspective, say from the other side of the boundary. In mathematics, you would easily see that if you move something from one side of the equation sign to the other side of the equation sign, then what was plus becomes minus and the other way around. So at this soul level too, the same is the case. So once you want to dissolve the problems at that third level of, say, the orgasmic experience, you need to realize that the duality is actually a polarity of oneness. And in sex, of course, you quite quickly discover that, because how the male and the female genitals fully complement each other. They are in that sense each other's opposite, and together they form the whole and fill the whole, if you want to say it that way. But also you discover that in the female approach, which is more hormonal based, and the male approach, which is more neuronal based, you have, let's call it, the long wave and the short wave combined. You have the radar dish and the radar antenna in the middle of it, as a result of which you can scout light years away into the universe, only if you connect the polarities properly. So in sex, it is quite logical that that polarity is already implied and understood, but sometimes it needs to be made explicit, because at that third level, when there are oppositions in point of perspective and views, it simply needs to be realized that of course you need to see things differently, because you're different people and your view does not apply to the other, because your standpoint is not the standpoint of the other. If you stood in the other position with the other history and the other background in the other life trail, then you would see it that way too, as the other does. And so in that way you can easily resolve those conflicts at those third level. And finally, at the fourth level, when you go to the spirit level, where your orgasm level has brought you to the level of the visions, basically you don't want to be there in a flash moment of the firecracker having been fired and just given this burst of light which fades away very quickly, because actually you want to make that the level where you live at. So that means that you need to have resolved the fixations at the physical level, at the physiological level, at the neurocrine level, and then at the conscious level you can realize that the reality that is actually an ongoing realization, that transient moment of orgasm is actually a state of being of heightened awareness. And the more you realize that, the closer you get to that, it's in a way as if you can transform it, as if you can catch the lightning in the high tension power lines, and if you can then transform it into the current which you use in the household, and if you can then apply it to drive the chip in your internal computer. But all of that becomes evident only if you see that in our body and in our biology we integrate information and matter, and that in the sexual experience we actually go to the edge of that connection between information and matter, and that in orgasm we can sort of feel the electric charge of the hormones and the neurons together bouncing off each other like a lightning cloud or like a ball lightning in the skies, so that it can keep on going. And the only thing is that you then take the decision to not take a decision, so that you do not discharge the charge, so that you maintain that level, and in that sense you stay in the electromagnetic level, where the electric and the magnetic and the magnetic and the electric, the male and the female, the yin and yang, the carrier wave and the signal wave are continuously exchanging, because only then can you see that between them, at the crossing point of the electric and the magnetic, there are the moments of the decision of choice, of freedom of choice, the quantum flip, which we call freedom of choice. And the more you can let that process go, the more you can tune into that, and the more you can realize that there are many of those moments where you could flip the switch between the electric and the magnetic, turn an idea into an action, or turn an action into an idea. But actually you don't need to do that. It's as if you stay at the level of meditation, and in that level of meditation steer the course on the edge of the abyss. Muhammad called it the edge of the sword, the discernment between good and evil, as it is described in the Quran, is as sharp as the edge of the sword. And it is not, as some people say, it's like you have an abyss on one side and the other, and there's a sword between them, and you have to cross, walk over the length of the sword to get to the other side of the abyss. No, it's rather the other way around, that the one side and the other side of the abyss are so next to each other that the sharp edge of the sword is as much as you can see of it. At the pivot point between the electric field and the magnetic field is a singularity. It is at the size of a quantum. And when you go into orgasm, into this magical level, which we are addressing now, then you actually learn to get into that state where you can operate at that quantum level, because first you can know that it is there, then you can sort of feel it, then you can sort of see it, and at some point you actually learn to realize it. In Zen, that is called the taming of the bull. First you know nothing, and then you can see the turd of the bull on the road. Then you can see the tail of the bull around the corner, and then you can see the bull at a distance, and then finally you end up sitting on top of the bull. So the various schools of mysticism in their various ways have all described the same principle, that the more you want to get to this position of being a creator in creation, the better you need to understand the process involved. And sexuality, specifically orgasm, specifically the build-up of orgasm, and most precisely the preservation of orgasm, is one of the techniques by which you can learn to operate in that manner. So maybe this is a good point to conclude this part of the story. What I tried to explain in this fourth part of this sequence on sexuality is that sex is not as it is being advertised by churches, by government, by schools, by anybody else. That sex is not what somebody else says. The second part of the story was sex is actually the biology of the infusion of consciousness in matter, in so many different ways and so many storytelling ways of how the organisms give each other the information so that they can continue forming new forms of life, new forms of consciousness. And the third part of the story was how we actually see that take place in our body, and how in our body we see that it is the duality of principles, or the principle of duality, which shows us that the complementarity is also the path to understanding the completeness. And that the completeness is actually a process, this is a dance. And the dance, what we then call sex, is actually a staged transition, like using four gears in a car to go from standstill to top speed, in the use of the physical, the chemical, the electromagnetic, and the information level of the body. But the fourth part of the story also makes explicit that if you want to be able to do that well, you need to understand what those four levels are and how they correlate to different levels of consciousness, which we can also understand as different levels of development. But they are also different parts of our being, body, mind, soul, and spirit. So that essentially it is also the art of transcendence in being an individual, in relationship, in an interaction, in a transcendental experience of humanity. And part of that story is then also that in order to be able to do that, anybody can practice, but beware that you use the right intent with the right partner in the right circumstances for the right goal, because it is very easy to be confused if you have a partner who doesn't have the same aims, or has the aim of actually limiting you rather than enhancing you. So care is needed, carefulness is needed. And also, once you have found a partner who is compatible, then it is still good to realize that in your body you will have unresolved issues. They will be in your body, they will be in your physiology, they will be in your belief system, they will be in your foundation of how you experience reality. Some of that will be something that you are thinking of at that time. Something will come from something that you remember from your past. Some of it will come from your whole life memory, and some of it will come from the memories of your ancestors as it is built into the DNA. So once you know that, you can realize that yes, in sex you're working with, you're playing, you're interacting with this interface between information and matter, which is the key of life and the crux of operating freedom of choice in your body, in your incarnate being. But it is also something that you can look into and clear up. And in that sense, sex is then a tool or a technology to clean up the internal mess together with the help of the sex partner that you're doing this with. And that you can use the internal process in the body, linking the anatomy to the physiology, to the regulatory system, to the consciousness system, to actually clean out all the unresolved issues. And evidently that works best if you have a partner who, like you, is trying to do that. And a partner who, like you, is trying to connect to the universe and to humanity as a whole, instead of a partner who's just out for a quick fuck and a selfish aim, to call it that. So you don't want to have a partner who's trying to manipulate you and limit you, but what you seek is a partner who is willing to help you unlimit you, and so that you can each unlimit each other and discover what is really going on at the core of our own consciousness, which is that use of freedom of choice in the link between information and matter in the body. And sex is one of those amazing instances in which you can actually experience that and learn to get to know that and learn to operate that in such a way that you can actually work with it. So let me leave it at that for this introduction or the summary of the trail that I explored when I was baffled about what this society, this culture knows and doesn't know about sex. And so my finding was that what cultures believe has been much conditioned by an artificial belief system. It doesn't help. Biology does help to understand what it is about. Our body does show how it actually works, and in the functioning of our consciousness you can actually get an understanding of what possibilities there are in sex.